3, 2, 1. That's right. You're listening to the It's My Time podcast, a recording of the experiences, past and present, of everyday people.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
and now, here's your host,
you know who it is,
the one, the only,
let's go.
Asher Chua.
Hey, Frankie. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Asher. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Man, it's funny, before we jump back into our conversation, I was just thinking to myself, man, this is the first time I've actually seen your face. We've been talking over the phone like almost every other Sunday and during the week for like close to 5-6 years now.
And I hadn't thought about it until you said it, Ashley. Like, we've never actually seen each other. Like you might send a picture. I don't think I've ever sent a picture in our text chain, but yeah, so I think we need to get on a Zoom call so all the guys can kind of see each other. I think that's
right, right. Especially with all these body transformation everybody's making. It's PJ's doing his thing. I was like, I need to get on my thing. It's like, you get into the 180 club, I need to be in there. But it's like, let me make it match my frame.
Yeah, that would be super aspirational. I think I told you the story before. I was well over 400 pounds before. Mm-hmm. And for me to get to 180, it would be like, I'll be unrecognizable. When I was 400 pounds, actually, I had a head full of hair.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm like, some of my people that have known me for, I was like, oh, wow, you've changed a little bit. And I was like, yeah, I'm bald and just a little bit smaller now. Not much smaller, but I'm definitely bald now.
Yeah, that's funny. Oh, yeah. But one question I like to ask every guest before we just keep going is, who do you say you are?
Wow. I had this. It's funny you asked that. We were going around the classroom and I was an undergraduate student, and this was in my major. And Dr. Kluka, she went around the classroom asking everybody. She said, I want you to complete this in I am blank. And so she gave us a few minutes to think. And I was, unfortunately, I can say this even as a teacher. Unfortunately, I was still kind of like the class clown, even in college, Ashley. I know that's hard to believe. And so everybody was going around, I am dependable. I am this. I am that. And so I just happened to be the last person she called. And all I said was, I am Frankie. And everybody fell out laughing. And so she was like, explain that. I was like, well, I can't just kind of say like I'm one thing. Like, I try to be what I need to be at the time. So sometimes I'm jovial. You know, sometimes we need a break. We need a laugh. Sometimes I'm sentimental. I think about things and think about what people might be going through. I'm empathetic. I'm sympathetic. I'm a lot of different things. But I feel like one thing I told you about an interview process I went through just recently. If I had to define my life's mission, it is to help people. And that comes from me having an educational background, but it also stems from my mother and my father. They were both educators. Mom for over 20 years, dad for over 30 years, dad, teacher, and coach. So he's always in this position of where he's helping people. And so at the end of the day, I try to fill a need wherever I see a need. And so if there's a need for a joke to happen, if there's a need for someone to fill in a space to do some volunteer work, then I try to make sure I feel that. But I always, it almost energizes me, actually, to help people out. And so that's why I kind of feed off of that. Where can I see a need? And so I keep searching for ways where I can fill a need.
I like that. Yeah. And especially when we speak about comedy, it's like that's needed. Like sometimes you just got to break the tension. It's like, it'll get too serious or a little bit too lax. It's like, okay, let's pump some energy into here a little bit.
Oh, yeah, Asher. It is good for the soul. Like I've never been in a crowd I've made people laugh and it's not been well received, because it seems like laughter is always, and you know, sometimes on the phone, I'll just get on the case and we'll, yeah, exactly. I'll just make him get on his case. I get on P, you know, PJ and I stay into it.
Yeah.
And so it's just something that's jovial for us, and it's for, you know, for you all as well. So I think it's medicinal. I think laughter is medicinal in a sense. So
most definitely. I guess it's funny, as we were talking before, kind of for me discovering disc golf and just being like, oh, like I've got my old disc from college. And I was like, let me dig those things up. And then I went over and checked out the disc golf disc that people use, and figuring out that like they're almost like regular golf clubs, but you got to know how to throw them different and like have something to aim at. And I was like, maybe that's what I've been missing. It's like you do the podcast, but then you got this time off. And I'm like, let me just go do some target practice with that and just get outside. Weather's still nice, so enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. I count that as like one of my, I say like a quote unquote mindless activities. But what it is that disc golf, you will only be concentrating on what it is that you need to do on the golf. So I play golf, you know, I say regularly, maybe like once a week or twice a week, twice a month or something like that. But when I'm out on the golf course, Asher, I think about nothing else. Like that golf course is the only thing on my mind. And I think we need those types of activities, especially with the hectic lifestyle that you live, you know, working, doing all the work that you do, things that I try to do. We need those kind of activities to kind of get away from what it is that we're doing. And I promise you, I love golf so much. My wife knows when I'm not working, I'm somewhere trying to be close to a golf course or on the golf course, you know. Because I try to practice regularly now, because I'm really putting an emphasis on getting better. Like, I don't just want to play now. I want to get better now so my scores go down.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to hear the adventures in disc golf that you have. And you might even make me go pick up. Because watch this. I never knew, like, you had, like, different discs. I just thought you just tossed the same disc until you got it in the goal. So
yeah.
That's good to know. good to know.
It's interesting that you bring up golf. Like, how did you get introduced to it, and like, how did you like fall in love with it?
So, you know, I have a story for everything. You've been knowing me long enough to know I have a story for everything. So this was back in 1999. I was at Grambling State University, and we had an intern by the name of Reginald Latta. He was coming there. I was in the sports medicine at the time, and so we would always have dinner together after work. We'd go out, go to the cafeteria. And we were heading back from the cafeteria, headed back to the training room. Mm-hmm. And so Reggie just said, "Hey, Frank." And I was with a buddy of mine named Sam from Tallulah. He was like, "Hey, Frank, you all play golf?" I was like, "Man, nobody play golf. We, you know, we football, basketball. We don't play golf, man. Like, what is that?" And he was like, "Oh, man, you'll love it. You'll love it." So he went to his trunk. And I think he might have gotten, like, I don't remember the specific iron, but he's like a 7 and 8 iron. And so he went over the how you grip the club and what you want to do and how you want to do this and all that. And all I wanted, I said, "Let me hit this ball and see what this like." So he goes and he gives us a demonstration. And he hits the ball fairly well, you know. And I think I remember my buddy Sam just kind of being excited and hitting the ball, and it like kind of shanking to the right. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a right-handed player, that's typically what you do. Even to this day, that's my miss. I miss right. Mm-hmm. And so the first time, Asher, I ever pick up a golf club, we were standing on the football field, and I put the ball down in the grass, and our goal was to hit the ball. We were standing under one goalpost, and we were supposed to hit it between the other goalposts. My first ever shot, Asher, I hit it between the goalpost on the other end of the field. And Asher, when we found my ball was in a weather vane, a hole that looked like a golf hole, almost a little bigger than a golf hole, but it's like where the water would drain off the field.
Yeah.
And I was like, "I'm hooked. If I can get that feeling again," like, it was the most exciting feeling. I was like, "Oh, I did it. I actually did it the first time." And so I promise you, probably next week we were walking on a golf course, and it was much different because I was shanking the ball everywhere because I was excited. But that's how I got hooked on golf, man. And I just wish that I had gotten involved in it earlier so I could have taken advantage of some of the opportunities that golf affords you. Like, I'm watching the Tour Championship this week in East Lake out in Atlanta. And I was listening to the commentators yesterday. The winning purse is $18 million. And caddies who earn 10%, that caddy will earn like $1.8 million. Just for 4 days of work. You know, sometimes I don't think we look at, like, a caddy is a multi-million dollar job if you get attached to the right golfer.
Right.
And so, man, I just, since then, I have not been able to put the sport down. I have a buddy of mine. We're actually planning to go play next weekend to meet up in West Memphis, Arkansas. My buddy Glenn, who lives in Lake Providence, which is where I'm from. We just love to play. We love to get out and play. He was actually here not too long ago, we played. But any chance I get, Asher, I'm trying to play. But it was all because of the Reginald Latta. So he has me with this somewhat expensive habit.
That's hilarious. And I guess, kind of speaking to where you come from, and like you said, just having that initial thought of like, we don't do that. Like, what have you been back to where you were raised, and like, kind of what's that perspective like, kind of seeing things different?
I think a few more people play golf now. Of course, well, I'm from a small town, so everybody there knows that I play. Like, and there were just a few of us. I think at the time that we were playing, as far as we knew, Glenn and I were the only few people. And we had a buddy named Michael Kelly, who's a lawyer, and he played. And so all three of us would get together and play. And because we didn't have anything in our small town, we would travel to a little town called Monroe, Louisiana. I say little town, was much larger than where we were from. And we would join this Twin City Golf Association. And there were a lot of people who joined the that association. And we would have meetings and we would go out and play. We'd have tournaments and we'd travel. Like once a year, we'd go to different places and just have a stay and play type deal. Where we'd stay two nights and play the course one day. And it was just exciting, man. So one of my wishes is that I wish we could kind of get the kids introduced to it, because I know as a youngster, I wasn't introduced to golf. And if we could get more kids in the town introduced to golf, I think a lot of kids would take well to it, because it's an exciting sport. Like I say, you don't think about anything else about being out there. And it teaches you so many things. Like we have to be honest with each other about how many strokes we have to be courteous. Like if I'm further away from the hole, I go first, you know. Mm. So many intricate lessons within the sport of golf. And I think it would be beneficial, not just to kids in my hometown, but kids everywhere. Man, I wish kids would pick up a club. And just to say that, Asher, just do something different that you're not accustomed to. You know, sometimes we get in our comfort zones and our lane, and we don't want to be uncomfortable. I think sometimes we have to do those things. Like, this is uncomfortable for me. Nobody knows this but you and I, but we've been trying to do this interview for almost a year now, you know. And why should this, Asher? I'll be honest. Yeah. I wanted to avoid it at first because I'm like, I've never done this before, right? And I was like, I can stay in my comfort zone. I can just send Ash an excuse. And watch if I had one today with my headache we were talking about earlier. And I got a nagging headache. I think my allergies acting up. I was like, nope, you are not going to put Asher up. And underlying, you are a little uncomfortable doing this because you've never done it before. Mm. But how can I encourage someone to do something that I've never done before if I don't do those?
Right.
And so I think that's a big key, Asher. And I know that's well off the question that you originally asked.
No, you're right on it.
Yes.
You're right on it. But I mean, even to your point, I guess it's funny because it can be easier because we've obviously talked before for a long period of time and we built that rapport, and just having it be like, okay, we're having another conversation. It's not like an M series conversation, but it's just a dialogue between two brothers, and seeing we're on opposite sides of the country, or even me coming from across the other side of the world. But for the most part, growing up here, it's really cool hearing your perspective, seeing you and just getting to hear the things that you share and being able to share that with maybe one other person, because it's really cool. And I hope people sometime in the future, I'm sure people notice it because they pay me compliments, and being able to do something like a podcast is a way for me to highlight the people and be like, okay, well, if you think good of me, here are people that I think good of as well. And you can kind of see where some of their traits and things rub off on me. Maybe I'll get a little bit of funny from Frankie. I'll get a little bit of knowledge. I'll get a little bit of everything. I can take this from PJ, get that from Dr. PI, get something else from Barry, get something from Greg, get something from Gabe. And it's man, it's really a nice melting pot. And what's funny about it, when you mentioned football and picking up the golf club from that day, did you leave football behind or did you keep going?
Well,
with it?
You know, I knew I couldn't play football forever. I kind of my last days were in high school. I thought about it in college, but I knew I needed to be active, you know, being that I was, grossly, I was just over 400 pounds, as you can imagine, wearing the 5X t-shirts and I don't even know what size pants I went up to, but I knew I needed to be active. One thing that was called to my attention, Ash, and I was sharing this story yesterday. I was a basketball coach for a number of years, both at the middle school, high school, but I also remember coaching it in an adult league where you chose your own team of men or women and you competed against other teams from various cities and even within your city. But as a high school coach, I would have these workouts for my students. And one day, one kid was like, hey, coach, I bet you can't even do the stuff that you're asking us. And you know what, Asher? He was right. He was right. And I was like, wow. You know, instead of me getting caught up in who said it and you know, I could have easily gone down the path of, look at this young man being disrespectful. I'm going to put him in his place. Mm-hmm. Took it as a personal challenge. I was like, okay, I'm going to be able to do the things that you, I might not be able to do it today. And I think actually within the next week, I was up. It took me about 30 minutes to travel to my first job as a high school teacher and coach. I say high school, but it was actually a K through 12 school. But then the week, I was up in the morning walking and running a mile and eventually working my way up to running a mile. And so the kids noticed the difference in me. And like I would do things during school. I was more active in running with them and doing some drills with them. And so I took that as a personal challenge. I was like, okay, yeah, because I can't be, again, promoting something that I'm not willing to participate in. And I think kids see right through that, Asher. And I think that's one of the beauties of teaching children. They see right through things. We think we're fooling them. We don't fool them, Asher. And if you sit down and talk with them long enough, Asher, you'll know that they know. Yeah. You know, so I took that as a personal challenge. I thank him for challenging me for that. And I still try to stay active. You know, we've talked on the prayer line. At least 5 days a week, I'm out being active. I'm doing my workouts. And I've even now, Asher, added like an evening walk like 2 or 3 days out the week. I think it's something that I know it's something that I need to continue to do. And I want to make sure that when I ask students or other people to do it, that I am one who's bought in as well. And I'm giving them that actual proof like, hey, if I can do it, you too.
That's awesome, Frankie. And it's funny. I picked up on something that you do that the previous guest I spoke to earlier, Lepora, she mentioned it's like, using someone's name, it really gets their attention. And I'm sitting here like, man, I feel good every time I talk to Frankie. And I'm like, it's because he's using my name. It's like, man, it's like he's acknowledging me. And like to the point about just being willing to participate in the things that you're going to promote is huge, because it's like, I feel like it makes you question less what it is that you're saying. And you don't have to do a whole lot of convincing, because someone, if they see the actions that you lead by and it's effective and it's something that they may want to do, like they're more than willing to like approach you about it and just be like, hey, how'd you do that? Or like, can I come with you? Because like people like to be able to participate in things like that.
Yes. Credibility is so key, Asher, with people, with young and old, you know, like I said, sometimes we think we're pulling the wool over the eyes of the young, but they can see right through that. Now they might not say anything to you out of respect, but it's, you know, you'll gain that much more credibility when you're doing it, when you're talking about it and doing it.
Yeah. It's funny. I've got to credit my younger brother for challenging me on telling better stories or getting to the point quicker. Because I remember I was riding back and I was trying to multitask and like figure out like, hey, are we doing this? Are we not doing this? And like, I started going on this long tangent of like a soliloquy or a story trying to draw like a parallel and this and that. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, are you talking about me? Are you talking about this? And I start like barking back. No, if I was talking about, it's like, I'm not making any sense. It's like, just stop.
Oh, look, you know, I can be long-winded. I always have a story about, and that's why I'm starting to just make sure I try to listen more. Like I told you, I think I explained a couple of weeks ago on the M series about, you know, there's some people I need to talk to more, a lot more people I need to listen to more. You know, at home, I'm not much of a talker. So my goal with my communication with my wife is to talk more. You know you would never get this from the first few minutes we've done this podcast, as long as I talk, but I'm the director. When I'm in my comfort zone, I'm usually quiet. When I'm out and about and I'm mingling, I'm usually, you know, a little bit more interactive. So I said, I have to be more interactive with my wife at home, because everything we do and we want to implement in our lives, it starts at home, you know. So, you know, like I was talking about earlier about helping people. Well, I can't go out and be Superman to the world and then come home and be Clark Kent when I come home, because I've been there and done that. Actually, I made that mistake early in my marriage. I was just being everything to everybody, but then nothing to my wife at home. And so now I'm making sure that I am being what she needs me to be. And one of the things I needed to be was more communicative in the talking aspect, sharing more with her.
Man, I love that, because you just brought me back to being on that disc golf course earlier today. And with it being Saturday, and I know ET does his, they do service on Saturdays. So like I'll jump online from time to time, or if I get the notification, I'll click on it. And one of the things he talked about was a passage where he's talking about not giving your oil away, like if being wise and not giving your oil away to the fools. And one of the things that he said that struck with me, it's like, I'm not a provider. Like I put on this persona of being like, I'm a provider. Like that's the big thing for men. It's like, your husband, your father, your provider, protector. But it's like in wanting to provide for the world, it's like you're not doing what you need to do at home. So it's like you can't be Superman for the world and then, like you said, be Clark Kent at home. I was like, yeah, man, that right there, you hit it on the nail, because it's like just touching on the part of like being honest with, we can say it's society. And again, I was listening back to the chat with BK, and it's like, why do we always feel the need to explain or the need to like show, hey, look at me. I'm playing my part. I'm doing this. And it's like, you got to be clear on distinguishing how he said it was like the provider or the person that supplies it. You can point them to say, hey, you can't have my oil, but you can go to the person that supplies the oil, the person that manufactures it, that puts it out. Like if you're out of fuel, you're not going to come get me to pull the fuel out of my gas tank in my car and put it in your car, because now I don't have anything to go with. But it's like, if I tell you to go to the gas station, you're going to go, or more times than not, you're going to know for fuel, you're going to go to the gas station. You're not going to come immediately to your neighbor and say like, hey, can I get some gas, or can I get a little bit of this or a little bit of that? But like when he said that, I was just like, yeah, I needed to hear that. Like, I'm practicing that letting go, but also not holding on to certain labels or titles that I aspire to, because especially like you get around a group of men and people are like beating their chest and being like, yeah, I'm that guy. And it's like, are you though? But like being able to admit that you have your self-worth, but your self-worth isn't tied to like a title that you hold, or it isn't tied to being able to provide, but it's like you can provide for those you've been placed in charge of, or what you're responsible for, like being in charge of your household versus trying to be in charge of your community, or being in charge of your bedroom versus trying to just go take care of a park or something. It's like, if that's clean, but then the house environment isn't good, it's like, if you really answer the question, it's like, you might be running from something instead of addressing that thing you're supposed to be really dealing with.
Absolutely. Self-assessment is so key, Asher. It is so key. And if we can't be honest with ourselves, we're not going to be honest with the people that we are around. And so, like you said, for me to see the needs in my life, it takes a lot. Like, it's not easy. It doesn't feel good all the time, but it's necessary. If you're going to be what you need to be and who you need to be, it self-assessment is so, so vital. So, yeah, I found that out. I'm still finding that out, because, you know, different times bring about different things, and you have to not constantly be in that state of self, but you don't just self-assess one time. Like if I just self-assessed in my 20s and I haven't done it again now, then, you know, that's 20 more years I've lost, or, you know, some things that are going to pass me by, I'm not going to be attentive to if I don't self-assess. So we need to self-assess, I would say often, you know.
Yeah. And the thing that's funny about it, when you speak about self-assessing, it's like having the ability to do it. And then when something kind of comes up in your consciousness or something, you come across something or you read something, it's like, oh, okay, that hits. And you don't have to do like an assessment, or like, you don't have to sit down and do like a whole breakdown or something, but just being able to see something and recognize what it is or what it's not, and say, okay, I'm going to move in this direction, or I'm okay where I'm at, but like, maybe I don't do that anymore. Or I notice it. I'm not going to bury my head in the sand and just be like, that's not important.
and then you just
go a little bit longer. It's like, man, I really have this problem. I don't know how to solve it. It's just, man, somebody should do something about that. It's like, really? Like, who's that somebody you speak of, Asher? Like, don't you need to be solving that problem yourself?
Yeah. I used to give this analogy, Asher. I used to ask some students, I said, okay, somebody, if an armed robber comes in here, he's standing behind us with a gun. If we all turn our back on him and ignore him, is he not there? It's like, he's still there. We just turned our backs and we're trying to ignore him. But it's going to be a problem sooner or later.
Right. I'm sorry. Oh, man.
Yeah, it is. I would just always give them an analogy like, don't put it off. But I would do those things. Like I said, I'm moving to what I ask of others. I'm doing myself. So, yeah, that one always got, you know, used to always get their attention. Like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, there's somebody. Like, if we just turn around, Asher. Like, if they showed up behind me right now, masked robber with a gun, like, as long as I talk to Asher, they're not there. Like, no, he's still there.
No, I'd be running. I'd be yelling at you, run, Frankie, run. Like, get out of there.
Exactly. So I think that's how we have to approach our problems. If we ignore it, it's not going to go away. We need to do something about it. So, and if we can, we should.
Yeah, that's awesome. And with you being in education for a bit, like, how did you get into it? Like, leaving high school, deciding on college and then saying like, I'm teaching is something that I want to do, or just having that impact on younger generations.
Yeah. It went back to, Asher again, my mother and my father. My mother was an educator and that my father, like I said, my father was an educator as well. And that was one of the professions that I knew I could stay at home and do. Like, coming toward the end of my college career, my mother had been diagnosed with breast cancer. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to go home and help out with my mom, I have to be able to do something that I can do in my hometown. And education was always one of those things I knew I could go back to. And you know this from the talks we've had on the MCU, things that I see people do, especially close to me, I feel like I can do them. So I saw mom and dad teach. I was like, well, I can do that, you know? And I think I had that conversation that was centered around me getting out of my comfort zone, which is why I'm trying to do other things now.
Mm.
But it was always my mother and my father who led me down that road to education. And of course, I have a host of cousins who were educators, just a lot of people in the family who were educators. And I always saw that. And so if mom was an educator, dad was an educator, we had their friends were educators because, you know, they were just working together a lot. And I remember my mom tutoring. I can remember helping her out when she was a tutor, and it always stuck out to me. And I was like, again, going back, I couldn't verbalize it then, but it was intrinsically, I was always feel really good about helping people. And it, you know, helping with math or reading or what have you, it really made me feel really good to help people out. And so education is always, will always put you in that place where you're able to help someone out. And so that's what kind of led me in the field of education.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And I guess from your time in education, what's been like one of your best moments?
Oh, wow. The good thing about it is actually I've had a lot of good moments. And I've worked K through 12 and higher education recently. And so some of those moments are, you know, when students come back to you, they might not have agreed with you or they might not have listened then, but they come back and tell you what you did was right. Mm-hmm. That's always good because you always question yourself, Asher, I don't like to ever put myself in a position as an educator to be like domineering, like you just do what I say because I said, do it. Now, Asher, I was raised in that era. Your parents and grandparents told you to do something, you just did it.
Right.
You know, but now we have this generation of kids who wants to know, they want to know why. And I try to find the silver lining in everything. So I said, well, at least they're inquisitive. At least they want to know why they're supposed to do this. So right. If I ask you not to climb up on the top of the swing, well, it's because you might fall and you might have an injury. You might break a bone or you might do something. So that's why. Or why are we doing this? Well, I'll say, well, we're doing this because it's going to set you up for success later in the unit. You know, if we're teaching a unit on whatever sport we may be teaching, it's going to set you up for success later. This is why we do these things like that. So I love the helping people aspect, but it's just a lot of things that go in education. Being able to help older students kind of figure out their career path.
Mm-hmm.
I try to get students to volunteer in something that they think they want to do for a lifetime. All right. And so you can do it for free with very little consequence. So like, if you want to be a teacher, I would just challenge them to go sit and mirror a teacher for a day. Like while you're in school preparing to be a teacher, go sit and mirror a teacher for a day. See what he or she goes through throughout the course of the day.
Mm-hmm.
See if that's something that you could feel like you could make it throughout the course of the day. You know, if you want to coach, go out and coach and volunteer. You know, you have your girls and boys clubs, your YMCAs. You can go and volunteer and do those things. Go see if that's something you really want to do. I told you earlier, we had a conversation, like you said, about 2 weeks ago. I'm an umpire. I officiate several sports. That was something I went and saw. I was like, wow, I could do that. You know, just learn the rules. kind of regulate, help the game continue on, regulate games, kind of explain to students about, you know, players, about rules and circumstances and things like that. I enjoy it, but I always try to encourage. And so when I've seen students who go out and they do those things, say, wow, you know what? That's not for me. You know, I was like, wow, look, I just saved you 2 or 3 years of going through court work for you, you know, you're wasting your time. Or like, wow, this is for me. Yeah. And so it kind of encouraged them to go ahead and speed on, because I used to tell my college students, as long as you're not a money earner, you're a money spender. So you're spending money now. Get out of school as soon as you can so you can go and earn that money. You know, I've been fortunate enough to teach some students who've gone on to the NFL. I'm so proud of them. Now, it's nothing because of what I did, but I just happened to be their professor at that time. But just to see them go on and be successful, not get into trouble, keep their head on straight, know what they want, you know what they want to do. I had a student tell me, you know, I want to be able to make it to retirement in the NFL, and he's done that. And so I'm so proud and thankful that he remembered his goal. You know, now he's a proud family man. I'm so proud of him. I text him every other week or so just to check in with him and his family to make sure that they're doing okay. But like the success story, to see them go out and be successful. Asher, some of my kids, I know I don't look that old, but I have some students who have children now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just to see them raising their kids now and say, oh, coach, I make them, you know, follow this rule and that rule and that rule because you taught it to me. And I'm like, man, I appreciate that. I just recently visited with one of my students out in Virginia, maybe 3 weeks ago. And he still follows this rule I taught him. Like, he was the one who would, like, he would call me Esher every day, all day. If something crossed his mind, he was calling. Mm-hmm. He's like, I still remember that rule. I used to give him a rule, Esher. I said, don't call me until you see 4 numbers on your clock. And at night, if you see 4 numbers on the clock, don't call me. So he had it between 10 o'clock and 9:59 to get anything he wanted. But from 10 o'clock at night to 9:59 the next morning was my time. And I said all that to say, because I used to give all my time away. I used to have 12 and 13 hour days while I was working and giving my all to students. But then, like I said, I was coming home, I was burnt out. So I said I had to learn like a work-life balance as much as I could. And that was one of the things that helped me. And I think I helped them, because you have to learn how to set boundaries. You know, a lot of times you can get pulled in different ways. And because my mission is to help people, as long as I feel like I'm helping people, Asher, I would be willing to be pulled that way. Right. But then I have to learn. I say, okay, if I'm pulling that way, I'm pulling myself further away from home. And I'm sure my wife would love to have some of this time with me. You know, if we stood up and made vows to be married, I'm sure she would love to have some of this time. And so now I'm more mindful of that, Asher. But just the success stories that, you know, to see them be successful does my heart good, you know. I don't do it for notoriety or anything. Like, I just do it because I know that you get this life and that's what you get. And if we can help you make the most out of it, then I'm all for it.
That's awesome, Frankie. I'm going to mute your end just for a second.
Okay.
But my wrestling coach did, he had some of that similar feedback, just speaking to students kind of coming back and being able to share what their experience has been in life and what the impact he's been able to make, because he came to my high school my junior year when we hadn't been to the state tournament, or we hadn't taken many qualifiers for 20, maybe close to 40 years, like 20 to 30 years. And it was just like, it was interesting to see the shift of, like, we went from having like one coach, two coach, not really committed to it. And then after the fact, it was like, once he came and really put in that structure, like showed that he cared, but really pushed us to the point where, like, we were really bickering a lot of times. I was really bickering a lot of times, but seeing what it produced after the fact, like, you go from taking one person to the state championship, the tournament, going to team duels, like the whole team wrestling against other teams in the state, to 8 people junior year, 8 people or 10 people senior year. And then you've got going, and I think getting second place in team duels, or at least getting to where it's like, oh, you're competing with everybody in the state now. And then a lot of those guys could go on and, not like beyond wrestling, build something for themselves. But seeing, being able to be on the other side of that is also awesome. There you go.
Yeah, I think that does, the people who invest that time, it does that heart all the good in the world to see, you know, who they train to be successful, you know, because a lot of times in sport, it has to be more than just about the sport. Like, it had to be holistic development that was going on. And so I'm such a proponent, and you can't just prepare people for sport. And anything I try to do, I try to make sure you know what it is that we're here for, whether it's physical education or whatever it is that we're studying. But I also want you to know the human side, like how to treat your classmate, how to get along with them, how to talk through a problem as opposed to fight out your problem. You know, I think that does educators and anybody else who's in that helping profession, it does their heart all the good in the world.
Yeah. I like that. And something else that you just pointed to is like being able to talk through your problems versus fighting through your problems. I saw this clip with Mr. Jason Wilson, and it was a young man talking, and he was talking about how he didn't think he was assertive, or he was confusing being assertive with being aggressive, and especially like being in a relationship with a younger lady, and she was mentioning to him like how she wanted him to be. But it's like in that sense, it can be very toxic. But the thing that he talked about was like in being assertive, you have to be precise with what it is that you're doing. And I think that speaks to being able to use your words and actually being able to communicate. And even though like this for a while started out challenging, being able to like stitch the words together and have the dialogue, have the conversation, it's been more of a treat, and it's made it easier for me to make an actual point and be like, okay, this is what I remember from that day. Like I may be consuming less media, so I can actually recall what I consumed or what I watch, but I can also relate to it now because I'm clear on not just like taking a whole bunch of information and it's like, oh crap, what was that? Oh, you're muted.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Oh yeah. Wow. That's good.
Yeah. But let me, I guess in the sake of both of us respecting the time and not just going long for long's sake, what's something you're looking forward to as you're kind of wrapping up the year? And like, yeah, I'll just start with that.
Oh, wow, Asher. Well, this will make Barry proud. I'm looking to get into something different and challenging and making me uncomfortable. I've been in the educational vein for years. And so I'm just looking forward to something to kind of, you know, make me uncomfortable. I should be careful when I say that, because when it comes along, I'll be trying to avoid it like I tried to avoid this interview. but looking forward to, okay, what's next? Not forcing it, like not forcing things and not trying to manipulate things and not trying to worry about things, kind of taking things where they are. But not being afraid when something new comes along, trying some different things, listening to some different things. That's why I wanted to do this so badly, Asher, because this was something this you can go down in history, Asher, and say you were the first person to have Frankie on a podcast. And so I just want to try some things different, want to help make sure I continue to help as many people as I can. And seeing which ways I can do that to make myself available to do that. But also making sure, like I said, take care of home first. And looking to finish this year, we talk about in the M-Series how the last part of the year is your springboard into next year. So just trying to make sure I build some momentum, even though it's kind of the year's winding down. We tend to wind down with the time. Just making sure I springboard myself into 2023 and then see where that goes. I'm in I'll say something on the side, Asher, where I'm learning how to be an interest cancellation specialist. So for those people in homes, gotcha. It's like if you're in a home and you have a lot of interest that we don't realize how much, this is my financial education, I'm just sharing. We don't realize how much interest we pay out initially in home loans and trying to help people get to owning that home sooner, saving some people as many as 10 to 15 years on their interest on their home. So I'm in that pretty heavily right now. I'm Asher. I'm looking to become some other things. So working on some other things, trying to finish a book that I haven't been. Just got to give it that last final push before I can put that out. But again, Asher, just looking for some new thing, looking to where I can be of service, but then not running from those things that kind of make me uncomfortable.
That's awesome, Frankie. Are you going to have an online presence with that, or can people follow you?
Here's the thing. I would love to know how to do this because I have an idea for a podcast. Actually, you know, been in education for as many years as I've had, the experiences that I've had. I would love to talk to educators, but I also want to talk about, because when you think about it, Asher, education is not just in the school building. It's the community that makes education. So it's the, you know, talking to people outside of build. So talking to people, talking to parents, see how they feel about the educational system, talking to people, you know, just from all walks of life and see the input that they would have about education and listen to those things. So I would learn love to learn how to do things like a podcast so I can get on and kind of share that with people and allow people to kind of do what you've allowed me, share their perspective and see how they can help other people. And so that's a goal of mine. I don't know. I want you to tell Barry because he be trying to get me. But yeah. And by the way, Barry's a mentor of ours.
I'll eventually get him on here. I know we talked about it before, but it's time's kind of gone and come, but the other thing I'm learning to be, like you were saying, is being patient, like pursuing the things that make you uncomfortable and kind of challenge you, but also like letting things happen in their time, because it's like in trying to chase too many things at one time before it was a bit much. And I was like, like you go from wanting to do all these things to wanting to do nothing. And then it's exactly. Like, maybe we just pause for a minute, just let it breathe. But I was going to say the best thing you can do for podcasting, just start with your phone, hit the record app on there and just like start even before you hit record. Like, well, no, I would say hit record, but at least have a conversation with the people you want to talk to and just be like, hey, can we just exchange for like 5 minutes, and you just hit record, because that way it's like, it'll kind of teach you as you go, because then you can play it back and be like, okay, no, the mic was facing the wrong way. Or, okay, hey, I need to change this, because it's like, I just got this mic this year and this is 3 years in. And I was kind of hesitant about doing it, but this was the mic that we talked about on one of our calls. Yeah. And I didn't get it that same week, but I waited like a week or two and I saw that it was going on sale. So I was like, let me get that. And I was trying to use like the Affirm app where you can split up the payments without interest and just kind of spread it out, so you're not just getting a whole bunch of payments at one time. But it all went out at one time and I was like, okay, well, it's not terrible. So it's manageable and it's a good investment. But I've been using my laptop for the longest time and it's still working. The power cord is hanging in there with me. But just for me, like getting over the fear was just being willing to hit record on the phone, or like I picked up some other tools like this Zoom recorder. I don't know if you can see it really well. Like this thing's heavy duty. You could also get something like that because you can plug in your headphones into it. That way you can actually hear what you're recording, because that's what I used when I recorded with Gabe at the last retreat, the last men's retreat. And then just hearing how clear the sound was, even though like it could kind of pick up the guys in the back chatting or playing billiards or pool. It was cool. And like, I've had this thing from around the same time that I started with just the basic. And I was like, I was getting myself too worked up about like how to do it and this and that. So I was like, just start with Zoom, use just like the laptop. Like it's not great for the audio, but like the best thing they say is like, focus on the audio first. But the main thing is just have the conversations and just get comfortable. And it's like, you'll do it. You might not like hearing your voice back, but the thing that kind of pushes you over that is maybe listening back on double speed or just focusing on what the end goal is and just being like, okay, although I don't like how I sound, it's not about me. It's about like why I'm doing it. I think that should help you. And that way it's like, I won't mention it to Barry and this won't go out to where he can see it. So if you go ahead and like doing that jump start, you just start recording with people as you see them and just kind of touch base a little bit with what you're doing just to make sure that it's got some kind of quality to it. You'd be like, hey, I was thinking about this idea and I've already got 4, 5, 10 recorded. That way it's like, oh, look, it's big time now. It's just like,
Absolutely. I like that, Ash. You spoke directly to me, getting out of my own way.
Yeah.
And just like kind of letting things happen. Yeah. That is me. I get in my own way, in my own head. Yeah. Yeah. So you just help.
Yeah. But that's past tense. We don't do that anymore.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Oh, yeah.
Awesome. And one last question I'd like to ask you from the first question I asked you is, are you still who you said you were?
I would like to say that I am, Asher. I would say that I am. I've evolved and changed some for the better. I would hope, you know, that is left up to other people. But to me, I feel like I've changed for the better. I've had to become clearer about like that vision, that mission statement. I said, like helping people. I go back to your story about the oil, like don't help people to your detriment. Like you can't go out of your way and you're depleted. So I don't think that's helping people, because the best way you help people is to help yourself first. If you can keep and sustain yourself, then you can help a lot more people out there. Now, I used to take that as like, I'm being selfish, because like, if I have one thing that I don't like, selfishness. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that statement as being selfish. I'm like, okay, if I'm run down and I'm in the hospital or I'm this and I'm that, I'm not going to be able to do what I need to do. And so, you know, on the airplane, it just took the flight, Asher. And, you know, it's so funny every time I hear that, say, in the case of an emergency, you have to make sure you put your mask on first before you help anybody else. And it makes so much sense. You can't be running around the plane putting masks on people and you're the start of oxygen, because sooner or later, you're going to be down and out. So, yeah. You know, I would like to say yes to that question. I, like I say, I've evolved and changed a lot more. But it doesn't change my mission. And it's not going to change who Frankie is, right? So, yeah, I would like to say yes that I have.
I like it. Mask on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Appreciate you, Frankie. Thank you so much for
Asher,
doing this.
Thank you so much for pulling me out of my comfort zone, Asher. I appreciate it. Keep going. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.